This is Radiohead. Heads Radio. With your hosts, Christina Hoffman and Jimmy Vidica.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to another episode of Radiohead Heads Radio.
I'm Christina.
I'm Shime, and it has been a while, hasn't it, Christina?
It's been a long while.
It's been a while. It's been almost 6 months, I think.
Jesus, really? Because it was April, yeah?
Yeah, what? Damn. Oh, I think, no, it has been 6 months then. Yeah, 4 plus 6 is 10.
Jesus,
I know math.
Jesus H.
What have you been up to?
Honestly, more than I thought I would. I was looking at my ankles, and I have several scars on them from being outside.
Ooh, ankle
scars. I was like, you know, that's a sign of a good summer, despite the Rona.
Despite
some from stupid things, but like one's just from a stick in a graveyard, and one's from a fence I didn't know was there in a park. I was outside, so, you know.
Yeah, exactly. You've been doing stupid things outside, which is important.
Exactly.
Let's keep all our stupidity outside for now.
Separated from people, obviously. Yeah.
Socially distanced stupidity.
It's stupid. Yes. Wow, that's my 2020, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Mine has been just staying inside, not going anywhere for the most part, but I don't have Rona, so.
Yeah, exactly. That's more than Trump can say, so, you know.
Hey-yo. And since, you know, obviously, you know, this, we were mentioning, you know, the pandemic and whatnot, we've all been, you know, everyone's going through it. Everyone is dealing with it in different ways. But I wanted to ask first off, before we get into, like, all the stuff and the, you know, the Radiohead stuff, because, you know, obviously.
The fun stuff.
What media has made you happy? It doesn't have to be music. It could be music, TV. What's helped you through this disaster that we call 2020?
I was thinking about this because we discussed this in April.
Yeah.
And I was like, what would I say this time? And my first answer was Succession, which I finally fucking watched. And it's actually like even more perfect for this time than I thought it would be. Not necessarily but just like everything other than Rona. I'm sure
right.
When they actually make a third season, it'll somehow perfectly encapsulate the Rona. But it's fucking great.
I've only seen like a couple episodes. I'll go back into it.
It's definitely one of those things where you're like, I mean, like, the first scene, it's, like, Kendall Roy, and you're, like, this fucking Donald Trump Jr. piece of shit.
Yes, you know? Exactly.
It was interesting. I was reading an interview with, I watched an interview with Kieran Culkin, who plays, Roman Roy, and he was saying, he's, like, when I first read the pilot and when I first, like, shot the first couple of episodes, I was, like, I don't really care about these people. Like, I'm having fun, but I don't really care.
Yeah.
And then, but he's, like, so even he himself had that experience of, like, becoming sort of more like actually kind of caring about them despite the fact that they're like egregious horrible rich people but also just like the storylines that happen. It's funny how empathy works when you see good actors portraying terrible people.
And it's also writing. It's not just the acting, it's the writing.
True.
Like,
oh, the writing is exemplary. Yeah, for sure.
All right, I need to give another shot because that's how I felt. The watching is like, I don't care about these fucking people.
Yeah, no, you should reshoot.
Okay.
Reshoot.
Okay. Okay.
And then music? I'm like looking for my phone. I don't know. The new James Blake EP is amazing. And I say that as someone who didn't really care for the last album after the first few listens.
I'm kind of in the same boat.
Let's see. Like, that literally just came out the other day. But what have I been listening to? I've been listening to a lot of reggaeton, honestly.
Oh, get that beat going.
Anything that makes, like, the, you know, the world feel better.
Yeah, that's fair.
The new Perfume Genius.
Oh, my God, it's so good. I have it on vinyl, Christina, the new Perfume
Genius.
Which
one, the Perfume Genius?
Yeah, it's so good. I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, and I'm really excited because 10 Tricks Point Never is about to drop a new album like next
week.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah, I can't think of really anything other than those things I said. A lot of old stuff. I've been really going through and just listened to shit from all around the world. And
nice.
But most recently, yeah, that new James Blake EP. Because he did a video for one of the songs before, which is also the name of the EP.
Okay.
And it was the socially distanced version of the video. And it's just him in his studio intercut with dancers in their homes.
Oh.
And the professional dancers. And so they're all doing different choreography to the song. And he's just in his studio, grooving. And somehow that, more than anything, and even though I have been feeling this a lot, made me miss going to shows. Somehow that video was the worst. Watching it, I was just holy shit, you know?
Yeah.
It was wild. But it's, would recommend the video though. It's great. It's a great video.
What's the song?
Before.
Before. Oh, right. That's what you, I think you said that. Oh, that's cool. Is Jamila in the video?
No. Jamila? No. Oh. Just him in his studio.
I
Although I'm sure she's somewhere there.
Yeah, she's holding the camera. Or a boom mic. She's just like...
Because
you need a boom mic for music videos. For me, what's something that I was just like... I've been obviously watching. There's so many different things that are just either... Not necessarily give me joy, just passing the time. But one thing that I found that gave me so much joy, Christina. I hope if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. So funny.
90 Day Fiancé.
Yes. 90 Day Fiancé, Always and Forever. I don't need to recommend that because that's Always and Forever. Great. But this show, it's a British show called Staff Let's Flats. Have you seen this?
I've heard of it.
It's...
Is it about a...
Glorious.
A council estate?
A what?
It's what does that mean? A project, a council estate.
No, it's a comedy about what's his? Oh, I should remember. I think his name Jamie Demetrio. It's Natasha Demetrio's brother.
Oh, yeah, he's
they
great.
They play brother and sister in the show, and he created this show. So he's
I've definitely.
Yeah, his family owns they own buildings and they let flats. You know, if you're not British, that means they rent apartments.
Yes.
The name for if you're not British, the name I was like, well, Steph Let's Flats. What the fuck is this? And then he's a realtor, whatever, and he's a fucking idiot, but it's so funny. It is one of the funniest things I've seen in a while. It's his sister. They play brother and sister on the show. Natasha Demetrio. Her character is so great.
Oh, that's awesome.
What redeems it is they really love each other, even though sometimes he's really brad. He's really bratty and stupid, but his father is their father's really Greek, but he loves him. He's like, I love you, my sweet boy. And he's just he's so angry and grumpy all the time. He's like, my sweet baby boy.
That's fantastic.
It's beautiful. Highly recommend it. It's just a great solve for 2020 to watch that show. Ugh. There's two seasons on HBO Max or HBO whatever.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So check it out.
Awesome.
I have no connection to the show. I'm not getting any money for this, but it's so good. You'll go through it really quickly. The episodes are short.
Nice.
So that. And then it ended. It is only because it's British television. There's six episodes a season.
Right.
So we got through it pretty quick. And then in terms of other stuff, music, some of the stuff you mentioned, what did you Perfume Genius, that mm-hmm. I, at the beginning of all this, I really got into Perfume Genius. I was had his stuff on loop.
Yeah. He's so amazing.
So amazing. And this record is every record's different.
Different.
So it's more expansive every time. What else is sort of recent? I'm trying to think of recently I've been listening to. Phoebe Bridgers.
It's hard to remember anything. Yeah.
Phoebe Bridgers' new album, Punisher, is great. It's not joyful, but it's beautiful. The last song, This Is the End, or The End Is Near. I should look it up. Whatever. Something about the end. It's it's very much not 100%, but it gives off Sufjan Stevens era Age of Odds kind of there's horns that come in. It builds and it gets really intense. And she she has this great scream at the end of it that's perfectly encapsulates this year. That's just so very cathartic and the music video is really good. Highly recommend that.
Clipping just dropped a new record today, and if you want something that's encapsulated this year, because do you know Clipping?
No.
It's Daveed Diggs's like industrial horror kind of rap group. They're all like Berkeley kids, like from like friends from high school, and like these dudes just kind of like create like weird like wall of noise shit, and he like raps insanely fast over it. And some of the albums in the past have been like sci-fi themed, and then this second one that just dropped today actually is like kind of the second half of like horror themed, but it's all it's like very much connected to like everything that happened this summer and like all like Black Lives Matter and protests and also there's a song that's like basically Candyman, and it's interesting that the movie didn't end up coming out, but I think it's like based off the original Candyman, the 80s Candyman. But I was listening to it today and I was like, damn, yeah, this is appropriate for how I feel.
Yeah,
everything's like just horror, like just like the world as horror, you know.
Yeah Sounds perfect.
Yeah. So that's fine.
Yeah. Now moving into very happy news. No segues. Tom and Diana have hitched gotten hitched. I forgot the phrase.
They hitched the wagon to the wheel.
The wheel and
to the horse. I don't know.
And went down the hill. Yep. They got married in Sicily. In a beautiful palace.
I know. I was like, Jesus. Yeah.
Holy crap. I mean, what are we? I mean, of course. But if you've seen, there's like a couple. There's like only like two pictures.
Yeah.
But they look very happy. Tom is wearing white, right? He's wearing white too.
I think so. I haven't looked at the picture in a second.
But you know,
I'm looking up the history of getting hitched.
I bet there's like a horrifying history to that word.
I think it's
like
tying horses to the wagon, I think. Something to do with that.
Or like stealing the wife before the other people can come find her or something. Hitching her to something.
Oh, God. Yeah, that would be because
that's like what it was in like medieval times, right? Marriage.
What, a business transaction?
You go kidnap the, like all the stuff about the groomsmen and all that is all about the kidnapping.
That's like in like culture.
Yeah.
There's some quotes from Jesus on here. Okay, I already don't care anymore.
But happy nuptials to them.
It looked very nice. Although I was like, wow, glad you could get married and none of my friends could. But that's fine.
All right. Yeah. That's what happens when you have access to when you have money. You can get your own machine that tests COVID tests.
That is true.
Like what's Cardi B did for the video? She like bought a testing machine.
Wait, for that really? Video. For the WAP video?
Yes.
Okay, well, sorry. So, something that brought me delight in the 6 months that since we've recorded. Obviously the WAP song and video.
Yeah,
and how angry it made conservatives. Oh gosh.
My favorite is like I accidentally watched it, like how the fuck do you there's no MTV anymore. You can't accidentally change a channel and find that. You have to find that shit. You have to search for it on the internet and then press play. That's not an accident, motherfucker.
So beautiful. Wow, I didn't know she had a testing machine, though. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So I bet all the celebrities got testing machines. I bet they have so many things that we don't know about. Yeah.
They have Regeneron.
Illuminati.
Yeah. Illuminati. So a happy Illuminati wedding to them. Yeah. I'm sure all the Illuminati people were there.
Jay-Z.
Who else
George
is in the
Soros.
George Soros.
Obviously.
Hillary Clinton.
Hillary Clinton.
it was just a who's who of Illuminati.
A veritable who's who of lizard people.
I don't have a segue for this, but this next item. But I guess it has to do with Tom and Diana. It's that there was that cool behind-the-scenes interview for Anima that came out not too long ago. It was really cool seeing Tom sort of talk about everything, seeing him like rehearse the dancing. What site was it on again? It was like on
a site I had to sign up for to watch the whole
oh,
video.
That's right. Yeah.
I was like, okay. It was like WB.TV.
WWB?
Yeah, exactly. what was the frog's name? Jefferson T. Frog or something?
Lester. I don't know.
It's not Lester. it was on GWTV.UK. Okay. GW. George W. Television.
Yep. George W. Bush loves Radiohead.
He just segued to music TV, actually.
Yeah. Yep. After his paintings.
I had something to say about that video, which I forget, but I wrote it down. Well, just how Tom was talking about at the beginning, like, and I couldn't, I, at first I thought he was talking about the people, the dancers, but I think he was just talking about the state of the world, and he's like, people are, people say they're fine, but underneath they're angry. And I was like, well, if you, I mean, that this wasn't made in 2020, but again, very 2020. And then someone asked him if it was like a physical manifestation of what's going on in his mind, and he was like, I wouldn't sign a contract to that, but yeah, probably. Like, that's, yeah, probably. That's alarming. That's alarming.
And just, and then I think the one, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that he also pronounced, we've been saying Tariq Bari, but he called him Tariq.
Oh.
But that also could be, a British thing, because he also said Damien instead of Damien. Damien. And he also said Diana. I heard him say Diana, so.
Diana?
Maybe he's just English and doesn't give a shit about pronunciation or.
Tom, stop being a colonizer. Come on. Get with it. No, I'm sure he's just does what he wants because he's Tom and he just is like, it's like, whatever, this is how I say it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think we've actually heard anyone say Tariq's or Tariq's name.
That's true. If we just read, it's like those things of just like reading, you only read it and then you're like, oh, I have to say this out loud now. Like,
Yeah.
But yeah,
but it was cool seeing behind the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah. I think P.T. Anderson like walked by at some point. They like, I forget what he said. Yeah.
Well, because he was, Tom York was talking about like, he's like, oh, the first time I met P.T. Anderson.
Oh,
I was
so,
and then he like walks by and he's like, shut up, go away.
Yeah.
You don't get to hear this. And then we don't end up getting to hear what he was going to say, which is.
Yeah, it was a very strange, it felt like a fragment of a longer interview.
Yes.
Right?
I'm sure it was like fully. Yeah. It's probably also, something that would have been on the DVD if there was going to be a DVD. Yeah.
Also, sometimes, like, how it was framed, it was just, like, cutting off people's faces. Like, is this a hidden camera?
It's artistic, man.
Okay,
artistic.
Cool. And I love not seeing people's faces when they talk. I guess that's how it is now with face masks. Anyway.
That's true. Whoops.
It's fine. Cool, yeah, check that out if you haven't seen it. It's cool. Another thing I thought was really cool, it came out, Ed sort of like did a little video and talked about it, was this really cool guitar.
Yeah.
The little rotating guitar. Unbelievable. Like, so cool. Like, I mean, again, just another thing that they can play with their next record, hopefully. Maybe.
Yeah, they're just stuck in the studio playing with that right now by like Ed by himself, just being like, burr, burr,
burr. It's so cool. I mean, if you haven't seen it, it's, how to describe this? It's like, you know, like a turntable basically on the like guitar that's, you know, down by where the body of the guitar is, and it rotates, and then there's little pegs you can put in there and it hits the strings, and therefore your right hand is free, or whatever hand you play the guitar with, your strumming hand is free, so you can do a lot more on the neck, and you can like,
it's like a music box
program. Yeah, and you can like exactly, and you can program it apparently using like app or something or whatever, digitally,
the Circle Guitar app.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Apparently it's going to be like sold like next year or something commercially.
Damn.
Yeah. So that's exciting. Again, just another little toy for Ed to play with.
Exactly.
He is a gearhead. We know, we've talked about it before.
Amazing.
But yeah, it's really cool to watch the video. It's really cool to just see it in action and like Ed playing with it, doing really cool things with it.
Yeah. It was wild.
Yeah.
Yeah, the technology, man. The technology that people are coming up with is truly astounding. For music. Everything else, throw it out the window.
Throw it out the window.
Like, burn it in a fire. But for music, I'll allow it.
Yeah, I'll allow it. Watch it, counselor. From there, the next thing I sort of wanted to talk about, I think this could be a new segment on the show. I was talking to you about this over text.
Oh, yes.
There's obviously always covers of Radiohead music always pop up.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, everything in between, interesting. We have a whole episode about it, but they're always coming out. So I feel like
always.
It might be every episode we can do, we haven't named it yet, maybe the cover corner, cover cubby.
I said cover me bad.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't want to make it assume that every cover is bad that we...
Well, that's true. But a lot of them are.
Talk about. Yeah. Ooh, we won't talk about those today.
That's true.
But whatever the segment's called, Cover Corner. Yeah, let's table it.
But yeah, let's table it. The as yet untitled Covers Corner.
Yeah. The first one that I saw that was really kind of interesting was this cover of Lift by
Skull Crusher.
Did you listen to it? What did you think of it?
Yeah, I thought it was nice. Mm-hmm. I didn't have many strong feelings about it.
Yeah, it was. It's always, I feel like, and I don't know if we've talked about this before, but I find it always interesting, and I think it works really well when women sing Radiohead songs, just because of Tom York's voice and like what they can do. It's like they can expand a little more, and that upper register is obviously more comfortable.
Definitely.
And it always makes it, I always like those covers more than any other covers, for the most part. But the only thing I'll say about this cover is that Lift has that sort of that crescendo, that like big moment. She kind of downplays it and doesn't do that big moment. Yeah. But it's cool to see not a Creep cover, right? So it's like
true. I was glad that she chose Lift to cover, but I feel like my main thing was that she didn't really like do anything with it that was different.
Yeah. She kind of mellowed it out a little bit. Yeah,
I was just like, okay, this is nice, you know. But yeah, I mean, because we've talked about this before, it's like either it should be like so different that it's like, actually, what did we say? One of the things was that it should be so different that it's like, whoa, what the fuck? And then there was another thing, and I don't remember what the other thing was. Maybe that it was just like, I don't know. Not exactly the same.
Just doing it, just executing the song really well?
Maybe. That might have been it. Yeah, possibly.
Just through someone else's perspective and lens?
Yeah, which I guess is what she did, but I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that means that I wouldn't have liked the song Lift if it wasn't by Radiohead then.
Ooh, that is a good, interesting idea.
Well, also, maybe I like the song Lift because it has the context of being by Radiohead and being from, like, 25 years ago. Not 25, but you know what I mean. Like, because I'm like, oh, I'm viewing this as a song from the past.
Yeah.
Whereas a new cover, I'm like, music that sounds like that, been there but done that. You know what I mean?
Interesting. I would love to. Then now we got to see. Hopefully, maybe a cover of Lift will come out that will be interesting and will like renew sort of a different idea about the song. Yeah.
I'd be interested in seeing that.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Do you have is there another cover you wanted to highlight this time?
Well, there was also, I mean, there was a couple that were mentioned in some articles that came out in Kid A.
Yes, this is a good segue, I think.
Yeah. Because there was a hell of a lot of covers that came, or sorry, articles that came out about Kid A.
Yes, and that's what our episode is about, the 20th anniversary of Kid A, obviously. But yeah, but that article had a couple of covers. Which ones did you want to talk about?
Ooh, well, which article was that, actually?
It was the Guardian article by Daphne A. Brooks.
Oh, I thought there was also another. I was like, obviously that article, but I thought there was another one too.
I'm sure there are.
My favorite article. So, well,
yes,
it's a very interesting perspective that I have kind of touched upon myself, but I would have not been the person to write this article
exactly
because it's from The Guardian and it's called "Why Radiohead Are the Blackest White Band of Our Times."
Yeah,
obviously a very eye-catching and possibly clickbait headline.
Yeah, but she supports the headline.
She supports it very well. Yeah, I mean, well, she starts off saying, "Ask anyone who's the blackest white rock band to emerge over the past 30 years, and my hunch is that few would say Radiohead, because of course no one would say that."
Yeah,
but she touches on a lot of things in terms of their influences being. Yep. Essentially jazz and soul and also modern hip-hop artists and which is something we've talked about in this podcast before. And I had some quotes saved from that.
I got a bunch quotes. I printed everything out this time. I'm using paper.
Ooh, wow.
Trying to be more, it's just easier for me to
well what do your printed out notes have to say?
Well, there's one, like what you said, that one talking about, you know, what people would expect if you said like the whitest or the blackest white band. Mm-hmm. And this quote I like, or is interesting. In sync with black music, though, immediately obvious contenders from that pop moment include funk rock veterans like Red Hot Chili Peppers, or perhaps if reaching late 90s rap metal hybrid bands, Korn and Limp Bizkit, who gestured toward hip-hop rhyme schemes with little pretense toward virtuosic MC flow. But these examples miss the point entirely, emphasizing superficial pop style rather than thinking more deeply about art that expresses the ideals and challenges of black life. And
exactly.
It's a great intro to the whole thing.
You know, I think I actually might not have taken any notes on this article because I was just... because I would have just copied and pasted everything, essentially. Because I was reading this, I was like, yes, this whole thing, this is what I've been trying to articulate in terms of like the way that the reason that they've stood against time, the way that none of their contemporaries have, because they're drawing from new influences. And there was another article that I found. The Jazz Times article that's very, very old, talking about their jazz influences. And I actually went back and I listened to, because I'd always known, it's like, oh, so they're like, this song influenced Pyramid Song, this song influenced National Anthem, this song. Yeah. And I had actually never listened to them. I mean, I'd listened to Bitches Brew before. I still don't get why that they think that OK Computer is like Bitches Brew. That is beyond me, but I respect it.
Yeah, I don't know.
You're like, listen, Miles Davis was doing something and you were vibing with it. That's all I can tell at this point. But they were saying, I think it's in the Jazz Times article, because technology is literally just defeating me right now. They're talking about like Sun Ra. They're talking about Alice Coltrane. And I think it was in the Guardian article as well as the Jazz Times. They were talking about the strings and dollars and cents being influenced by Alice Coltrane, specifically on Journey into Satchitananda, which is an album I love. Again, never would have connected them.
Yeah.
But I think it's less to see, it's less, like after having listened to like the song Freedom that inspired Pyramid Song, or the song by the Art Ensemble of Chicago that's inspired National Anthem.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to be like, oh, yes, this is exactly what that is drawing from.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to have those as references to see what they were inspired by.
Right. And it's like, and again, it's we don't maybe necessarily see the influence explicitly because they're inspired by it. It doesn't mean they're imitating it. They're just like an idea inspires them and it takes them in some other direction. That's what like artists do. Like you can be inspired by anything that takes you some other direction. It doesn't mean you're going to do exactly that same thing. That happens to me a lot. Like if I'm, you know, I'm working on a script or something, something completely different will inspire it. That has nothing to do with that subject matter or even tone, but a piece of it and takes, and that's what like sometimes people don't realize, like, how is that influenced by that? It doesn't sound like that. Well, it's how inspiration works. Yeah,
exactly. So I found it's actually from Johnny, but it's Johnny talking about Colin. So he says, my brother Colin says it's about ambition over ability, says John Greenwood, elaborating on his band's jazzy proclivities. We bring in our favorite jazz albums and say, we want to do this, and we enjoy the sound of our failing. That's what we do, and that's what bands have always done since the late 50s. A bunch of guys in England listening to American blues records and copying them. In our case, it's jazz.
Yeah.
And then, but there's a lot of Colin stuff, and like, I feel like I also saw this notated in another article about Kid A, that Colin would like come in drunk and play a jazz album over what they were playing, over like what they'd been recording, and then like they'd like turn down the recording and they'd be like, no, we just want it to sound like this, baby. Like,
it's like, yeah, hey,
it's more
British.
Like Coltrane.
Yeah. Come on, just like him, just like I imagine him smoking a cigarette, just throwing the vinyl, like, yeah. It's like the sleeve.
And this is specific to Dollars and Cents. And for Dollars and Cents, he brought an Alice Coltrane with Strings album into the studio. Mm. He played it alongside what we recorded and kept turning down what we'd done and kept turning up the Coltrane album until that was all you could hear. We wanted strings and harp, but we didn't have a harp and I don't play double bass. So Johnny put electrical tape strips where the notes It was like basically copying Journey to Satchitananda. Yeah. And I was just like, what? I never knew that. Like, this is this Jazz Times article is from like 2000, and like it's from like at least 15 years ago. Yeah, it's from 2001.
Wow.
So great. I mean, I guess that makes sense because it was after like Amnesia came out.
Yeah, which is explicitly more jazzy than Kid A for the most part.
Well, except for you got a National Anthem, and that's very they were very much talking about that's National true. Anthem.
Yeah.
With play the way that the ensemble of Chicago song, which gosh, what is it called? I think it's this is why I don't remember. It's called Theme de Yo-Yo, but it was the same thing. They wanted the horns to play like they were getting into a car accident, specifically for the ensemble of Chicago, and with Radiohead they wanted them to play like they were going to get into a fight.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it's like same sort of
same vibe. Same thing.
Like if you're being influenced by all this jazz, and like that's basically what hip hop is based off of, like
yeah.
Like, you're obviously going to have a greater tie to that kind of music than
absolutely
than anyone else.
And then Korn.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
There's another great quote in the article where she really goes kind of, it's really deep and really interesting. She's talking about a Black radical tradition. And she says, that tradition, which the philosopher and poet Fred Moten, I don't know if I'm saying that right, Moten, has written about extensively, reveals the ways that sound made by people who were once held captive, once deemed commodities, once defined as not human, is a vital form of self-making. It is the gateway to other life worlds to inhabit when no safe spaces are available. Black music, Moten argues, is eruptive and irreducibly disordering deformational force that has enabled colonized and defranchised people to make a way out of no way. And she's saying that Radiohead is tied to that notion.
And then she goes on to say that like people like Solange and Frank Ocean and Janelle and Childish Gambino and The Weeknd would not have the sound that they would have today if it were not for Radiohead making these steps and bounds in 2000. And I was like, that is a bold statement. I'm not going to disagree with it though. Because of how much effect that it had on the entirety of music, you know?
Yeah, and you look at how those, like, and that's why she has those covers in there. Like, look at all these Black artists who are covering Radiohead, you know?
Which leads us to these fucking covers, man. Oh, my God.
Great covers. Some of which we've played before, obviously, on the covers episode.
Yes, of course. But I was not familiar. I knew of Robert Glasper, but I had not heard his cover of... packed like sardines in a crushed inbox. Did you watch it? It's referenced in this article. He covers Packed Like Sardines in a Crushed Tin Box and Reckoner.
Uh-huh.
The Reckoner one is for his album, and it's like, it's, you know, it's a little closer to what you would think Reckoner would be, and it's like, it's definitely like very jazzy.
Of course.
The Packed Like Sardines has a beatboxer and a piano. Oh. So imagine a beatboxer doing the rhythms in the beginning of Packed Like Sardines.
Oh, like, wow. I gotta listen to it.
It's absolutely insane.
That's cool.
So that was definitely one of those things where I was like, first you're picking a song that I wouldn't have expected anyone to pick.
Yeah.
And like, he didn't do Pull Pull, but like, you know, close enough.
Waiting for that one.
But doing Packed Like Sardines, I was just like, fuck yes. And he had this like amazing take on it. Maybe just by having a beatboxer and a piano, but like, he truly made it his own. And it.
Yeah.
Whereas Packed Like Sardines is so like clinical and like. It's like skittery and just like, it's, I don't know, it's like the coldest song on the whole album, I feel.
Absolutely.
But like, he definitely makes it like more, he like brings this like warmth and depth to it. It's just
like, or it makes more organic.
Yeah, because it almost seems like a jazz improv session, like with the way that they're already, because I believe there's a stand-up bass as well. It's the beatboxer, the piano, and the stand-up.
Maybe we should find it and play it real quick. I can share screen.
Zoom technology. No, yeah, you should probably do that. That would probably be better than me playing it on YouTube up to the microphone.
Packed.
Robert Glasper.
This is Robert Glasper, my man Taylor McFerrin, Derek Hodge. We're going to do Radio Heads packed like sardines in a crushed tin box right here on One Mic, One Take.
He's got a great little, he's got a very like sultry voice.
Oh, interesting. I cannot hear it. There's no sound for me. Technology.
Okay.
Well, you can hear it, which is the most important part.
The beatboxing is phenomenal.
Right? Because at first you're like, what is happening?
Yeah. But it's still slightly different. The beat, I think.
That's what I'm saying. It's almost like a jazz improvisation because they're playing around with it.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Well, I'll just pretend that I'm hearing it. And
okay.
And you'll add it in post.
Yeah.
I remember I listened to it.
Great, great. Awesome. That's really cool. Very, very cool. Alright. Nice up Twitter. Alright, cool. that is cool. I wish I'd listened to that before, but I'm gonna check out the Reckoner one too. I'm really curious.
Yeah. That one's definitely my favorite though.
Nice. There's again, you said we probably did this one before in the covers episode, but the Leanne Le Havas arpeggi, which is so good.
It's so good, and I realized that it might be, I don't know if we did, but I maybe knew about it because there's videos of her doing it live for a long time ago, but apparently it just came out on an album of hers this summer. Like, she recorded it properly this summer in June. Yeah, it just said when I was looking into it, there was like a new album June that has that on it. And I think with hers, it's like very much a similar cover, but her voice makes it. The quality of her voice makes it like.
Her voice is
that's what really changes it. Yeah.
Her voice is so good. And they slow it down a little bit, it feels like. They slow it down, which is really cool. Interesting. One thing I wanted to say, which was kind of funny in that same article, is that she makes a point about a lyric that she mishears in Idiotech. She says, "Here I'm allowed everything all the time," which is "here I'm alive."
But I've also seen it written both ways, though.
Really?
Like that he changes it up.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, then.
I don't know for sure.
Well, I'm a fucking idiot.
I mean, maybe I could be wrong, but I've seen it both. I mean, because he also sometimes just like says different things. Like Tom will say different lyrics.
Yeah, especially with Kid A, because those songs, because a lot of them, the cut and paste, which they talked about many times, how he made the lyrics for this record.
But it works very well to her point of like, as like a satire of like white supremacy or like male privilege.
Yeah,
I'm allowed everything all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't
that's
really
true.
Fit specifically to the theme of Idiotech.
Yeah.
In that reading. But maybe, because who knows? Again, with the copy, the cut and paste,
Yeah.
And also being allowed everything all of the time is what's leading to the Ice Age coming. So.
Heyo.
You know.
There you go. You found it. I think you got it, Christina. So like we said before, there's tons of other articles that came out. We don't have to get into every single one, but there's some other little highlights with all of them. One thing I wanted to mention is, so BuzzFeed had two different articles. I really want to talk about.
Yeah.
Because one was always written by this gentleman, Matt Honan. He loved Kid A, and it's, he has some great quotes in it. And then there's also this gentleman named Eliman Abdelmahoud. He did not really care for Kid A. And while everyone's entitled to their opinion, there's some lines in this that made me angry just because I hold the album so close to my heart and like certain experiences with it, and he kind of dismisses certain things about it. It's like it's an album entirely enjoyed as an idea. It's a college thesis, a scene filmed in one long shot, a shark in formaldehyde. It's easier to celebrate the thought of what the album represents than it is to revere what you're actually hearing. I mean, again, wholeheartedly disagree, but I'm sure there's some people for that. That's what it is. But I think I'm only speaking for myself, but my experience with it was never like listening to it so I can be cool, because I was not actually not cool for liking Radiohead in high school. Everyone kind of made fun of me because I didn't know many people who liked Radiohead. I was like, oh, there's like, he's Shima, he loves Radiohead.
Well, I actually really like, because I also put, like, noted that quote as well, and I actually really liked what he said right before that. Because he says, I was working through the ideas in this piece with a music journalist friend whose opinion I trust and who loves Kid A. He offered that he found something about Kid A inspiring, that if you package abstraction in a certain way, it can reach people. And I think that's a very, very good point. Yes. Because it's like what they did, you know? Like, they were taking all their Warp Records influences and showing it to people who hadn't heard that before. Like, including me, you know? Like...
Yeah, that's very true. No, yeah, that I definitely, because of Radiohead, opened up other avenues and other bands, for sure, and artists.
And he also noted speaking of the Warp Records influences, he noted a review of Kid A at the time that I actually hadn't seen the bitchiness of it. A British magazine noted, what do they want for sounding like Aphex Twin circa 1993, a metal? It's so bitchy.
So like British, I mean, we know the British press are just fucking there. They love taking people down a peg, at least one or two.
But they also said that one thing that I hadn't known, which was that Tom York thought of changing the band's name during that time.
Yes.
To disassociate that's what I wanted to bring it up. from their other stuff.
I either heard about it a long time ago or didn't hear about it. And it's just like, so like, oh my God, this was in their minds, this was such a
departure
and like such a tumultuous period. They're like, is this radio? Like, what is, again, I'm going to sound so like this guy making fun of like, what is Radiohead? You know, at that point they're like, well, who are we? What is this band's sound? Is everything we've done before, that's Radiohead? And if we depart, that's not Radiohead anymore. You know, it's an interesting sort of process.
Yeah, they could have done their like Prince, their symbol moment. Just
right, which he did to fuck over the record company, right?
Or he like, did do that. Yeah. They fucked over their record company, I guess, differently.
Yeah.
Well, no, they said fuck you to the record company, and the record company was like, well, also fuck you. We're gonna sell all your shit and make lots of money off of it.
Oh, the best of. Oh, so terrible.
So stupid. Anytime I see it in a record store, I'm like, I want to hide it. Like, don't buy it.
No one buy this. Like, just put like Kid A in front of it. But no, it is that. I mean, he does bring up those points of, I have talked to people, you know, throughout my years who do like view like, it is a thing of like, oh, you know, if you don't like Radiohead, you're not hip or this and that. Like, very like a college thing of like, if you want to be part of like you want to be part of the cool kids, you're going to listen to Radiohead. And I think that's a lot of what he sort of like is sort of like, I'm wondering, that's part of kind of his experience with Radiohead.
Sure. It's like a backlash. It's like the bitter taste of a backlash in his mouth from 20 years later. But in the end, it's like, I don't really care, because if you don't care, then it's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't have to be for you.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I
was surprised at how much I did like the article, given that from the top I was like, oh, fuck you, you know? And then I was like, okay, that's an interesting perspective. Oh, that's a thing I didn't know. You know what I mean? Like, he also quotes the Pitchfork review of like the 10, which I hadn't seen this part, and he makes a great point that it is a very ridiculous sentence. The perfect score of Kid A, the reviewer had said, the butterscotch lamps along the walls of the tight city square bled upward into the cobalt sky, which seemed as strikingly artificial and perfect as a wizard's cap.
I mean, what is that sentence? What is that sentence?
That sounds like how I felt when I was really high at Madison Square Garden, honestly. Like, so, like, cool, dude, you're fucking tripping balls and you wrote an article. Great.
Yeah, like, good for you.
Like, but maybe show it to your editor, although who knows, like, Pitchfork didn't have an editor back then. No,
I bet that was the editor who wrote that.
Exactly.
but that's the thing that's brought up there, and in the book that we'll get into in a little bit, This Isn't Happening by Stephen Hayden, is that review put Pitchfork on the map.
Exactly. Yeah.
So that writer knew exactly what they were doing. It's like, I'm going to write this like ridiculous review because maybe, it's a reaction to other reviews or something. Who knows?
Yeah, but I don't think he knew that it was going to put Pitchfork on the map. I think he was just writing an impassioned review because he was, still coming down off Molly. Sorry, off wasn't Molly back then.
Shrooms. X. Coming off shrooms. Yeah. Oh, yeah, X.
But the Counterpart article was also really good. The listening to Kid A at the end of the world on BuzzFeed.
The
positive one.
Oh, the one that Matt Hoonan wrote. Yeah, no, that one was great. That was really good. What I liked what he said was like, Kid A sounded like a breakdown. It sounded like coming down off pills the next morning. It sounded like a hospital. It sounded like staring into the flick of a computer screen forever, or at least for 20 years.
But then he says at the end of the article, he says, there are critics, including my colleague El Amin, who wrote the other article, who say you can't have a good time listening to Kid A. They're right. Yet it does make me feel transcendent, at least sometimes, at least when I let it. It's beautiful and rich and has these sonic textures that somehow soothe my anxiety, like a nice warm Ativan. Plus, you can actually dance to it, like Aphex Twin.
Yeah.
But that also, that is something I've said for a while, that it does feel like a weird sort of, soporific drug. Who needs, Xanax? Because it just kind of, bathes your brain in, a fog or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, not every song, but
no, just, generally.
That's the general vibe I get from it, honestly. I don't feel depressed after I listen to it.
Yeah. That's why I took offense with him being like, no one can enjoy this. Like, motherfucker, the first time I listened to it, I was like, I was taken, I'll never forget that experience, lying on my bed, listening to on the radio, they played it full, and I was just like, oh my God, what did I just hear? I was like, and you're going to tell me it's like a college thesis? Like, go fuck yourself.
Isn't that similar to how the positive BuzzFeed article starts about wandering in on a college party?
Yes. Oh my God.
To his friend.
Oh no, that's a different article.
That's a different article.
Let me hold on.
Well, someone had a really great time listening to Kid A for the first time.
Oh my God.
It might be the Rolling Stone article, actually. Guys, there's a lot of articles about 20 years of Kid A.
It's the Ringer article.
It's the Ringer article.
It's the opening sentence. The opening sentence is, you will never vibe with Kid A, the fourth album from popular radio as hard as my buddy Chaz. Vibed with it during a Midwestern off-campus house party in the fall of 2000. And he has little details of he had his head up against the speakers, and just all these dudes just hanging out. It's
but
so
also
funny
that he walks into this room with eight dudes just listening to Kid A in silence at a college party in the Midwest.
Mwah.
And someone has their head on the speaker.
Oh, so great. So
and he's
great.
I don't remember what song it was. I'm going to say, because it's funny, it was Idiotech.
That was a very funny line.
But actually, my favorite line from the Ringer article, actually, was probably about towards the end. But he says, one important piece of that context is the Y2K scare. Yes. Hilarious in retrospect, but a huge, ominous, known unknown deal at the time. Mm-hmm. However many thousands of studio hours it took, the whole of Kid A was recorded amid the genuine fear that at the stroke of midnight on January 1st, 2000, computers might plunge the world into darkness into one terrible fingersnap moment. What makes this record sound half prophetic and half dated in 2020 is that in truth, computers would instead plunge the world into darkness by agonizing degrees over the next 20 years.
Yep.
Now, I haven't seen Y2K put into that context ever, and it kind of broke me. I was like, the world didn't end then. It's just slowly ending forever because of technology. I was like,
Yeah, it's the exact opposite.
Fuck you, man. Fuck you.
Like he says, in 1999, what was the big thing that obviously, like you said, Y2K. Yeah. And there's just this dread and this, oh my God, what's going to happen this new millennium? And everything's going to go berserk and nuclear missiles are just going to fire off and all that shit.
I actually don't even care as much about that part. I care about what the writer said about
thought the world
was going to end in 2000 because of technology. Mm-hmm. And instead, it's just slowly killing us over 20 years. And I was like, oh, yeah. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
It is a very important context for the album.
Yeah.
But I also really appreciated the Rolling Stone article, which is the first time I've said that in some years. Hey.
Hey-o.
But they say something that's kind of similar to sort of contradicting of like sort of encompassing of everything we've just said, but yeah. In terms of like this album as like just trying things out, but also like contradicting the idea that it is like pretentious or whatever. But yeah, they say Idiotech was meant to sound raw and clumsy, a garage band cover. Johnny Greenwood was clearly a punk who'd just unboxed his gear, and the klutz thud beat of Idiotech was in the same spirit as his pedal stamp noise guitar blurs and creep. And like the configuration or like the viewing of like Johnny or all of them as like punks who didn't know what they were doing, as opposed to people who are trying to like be pretentious and like ape Aphex Twin and Autech. I've actually never known how you pronounce that.
I think it's Autechra. I've heard Tom say it. But again, we know Tom is not great with the pronunciation. So Autechra, that's I've heard him say.
But rather than that they were just trying to be like pretentious and sound like all these other people, is like more that they were like punks, like in kids, like having that sort of spirit of being like, I just got this new fucking toy and I'm going to play with it. I've never also thought of Idiotech in that manner. Or
me
today,
too.
Really.
Same. I remember there's like a quote or something of Tom's I've seen from a while back. Is like he talked about like, I never read the manual when I get like a new thing. Mm-hmm. It's just like I just try to figure it out. And that's also with that same thing of they're just like, I don't know. Let's just figure this out. We're not going to spend 10 years and like really hone. Like we're just going to fucking open it up and just let's see what happens. Happy accidents.
Exactly. Didn't Tom say, or was it someone else who said that like as soon as he learns how to use like a pad or a sequencer, he stops. He's like, as soon as I like feel comfortable with it, I'm like, nope, can't do it anymore.
And that's exactly what Radiohead is. We've talked about this before. Like they're constantly doing that. That's why they're able to, they're not like other bands, like in the we'll mention in the book, like something like The Strokes or something, you know, like these too, you know, like these bands that like found their thing. It's like, oh, we're really good at this. Let's do this.
Do
this
is forever.
No, Radiohead's like, how can we constantly be slightly uncomfortable? How can we like, how can we make things exciting? It makes it exciting. Yeah. And some people might think it's pretentious, but it like we said, it's not pretentious. It's just like, it's playful. It's the opposite.
And if you think it's pretentious, then don't listen to it. It's like, hard. It's listen to what you like. That's what I do. I find it great, you know.
I accidentally listened to all of Kid A and I'm so angry.
Exactly. That's the same spirit. That is the same spirit. Oh my god. Yeah. Perfect. But that the Rolling Stone article has one thing that got my goat, that has actually gotten my goat for a while now, and I've been meaning to talk about it. When you're coming back into like what?
I know, I hope it's something that I wrote down, but keep going.
I don't think it is because I don't think you would catch this. No offense to you.
Taken.
Basically, they say that, and because I've seen this mentioned a couple of times in other things, but they say that they're like, even Kendrick Lamar sampled Pyramid Song. He didn't sample Pyramid Song.
I wrote that down being like, did he sample Pyramid Song?
It was like confirmed by Questlove. Like I think like Questlove jumped into a fight on Twitter. That it's actually just a very common jazz progression of chords on the piano.
Yeah.
Because
I was wondering what I don't remember because I know that record. I'm like, I don't remember Pyramid Song being in it.
Well, because you know, we all know how Pyramid Song starts. These chords.
Yeah. It's if I remember, F sharp, G sharp.
Unimportant.
F sharp, G sharp.
So, How Much a Dollar Cost, one of my favorite songs, and Obama's favorite song of that year. Just saying.
Great minds.
So, starts like this.
It does not sound like Pyramid Song.
But it's the same. I get why people think this. Because also way that samples get fucked with, and especially the way that rappers, and specifically he's fucked with samples. Like the sample of Silver Soul by Beach House in... Jesus Christ.
I forget who does that.
No, Beach House.
Oh, no, like who covered it or sampled it.
No, Kendrick sampled it.
Kendrick sampled
the sample of is it? It's in Poetic Justice or Jesus Christ. It's one of his songs from Good Kid, Mad City. But like they fuck with songs. Like it won't actually be the same thing, but you'll be able to be like, oh, this sounds like this. Oh, I wonder if it's a sample. But that is clearly a person playing piano live.
Yeah,
like that's a person just playing the piano and using jazz chords. And this guy with like great confidence,
is it Rob Sheffield?
I forget.
I think it's Rob Sheffield who wrote the article.
So should I tweet at him and be like, "You're a fucking idiot"? Yes, Sheffield.
There's also another thing. Yeah. There's another thing. If we want to bring up things in this article that are weird, he said it dropped on October 2nd, 2000, and instantly hit number one with zero airplay. That's also false because I heard it on the Optimistic on the radio.
Singles and stuff. Like I don't know.
But I heard Optimistic a ton. That's what. So they kept playing Optimistic like constantly on K Rock 106.7, and I heard it like, oh, what is this song? And then they would say, we're gonna play Kid A in its entirety, and that's what got me to listen to it because of Optimistic. So like he's wrong.
Well, you know,
Rob Sheffield, come fight us.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah, it's just funny because, like, literally you go into the YouTube comments of Pyramid Song or How Much a Dollar Cost, and there's people talking about it. Like, people are confused, but you know what you can do? You can go to whosampled.com, and it's not on there. Therefore, it is not a sample. Mystery solved.
Mystery solved. Done.
Mischief managed.
Yep.
But the fact that people think that, it just goes to more of what that article and what I've said before is that they have the same influences and work from the same musical like patterns, you know.
And it wouldn't be weird for him to sample radio.
Exactly,
that's the thing. Yeah. It's plausible.
Yeah.
All right, and so we've gone through the hundreds of articles. And we also wanted to talk about a fantastic book that just came out, like right the week that Kid A, the anniversary, beginning of October, is his book. I mentioned before, This Isn't Happening, Radiohead's Kid A and the Beginning of the 21st Century by Stephen Hayden. It's not a long book. This is not knocking, but I'm just saying you can read it really quickly because it's a really easy read and it's a fun read and it's really well written. I got through it pretty quickly.
I found myself reading it really quickly.
It's so good. He's
a very
such
engaging
a
read.
He's engaging. He's very funny. But also a fan. So it's like he's got this great knowledge and like he's been a fan for almost since the beginning, since Creep.
He had his little high school review of Creep, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Or was it high school, college or something?
Yeah. Again, highly recommend it. A lot of interesting things in terms of not just Kid A, but like everything that was happening around then and then after Kid A and lead up to Kid A. I have so many post-it notes as... Like, look at all these post-it notes.
Yeah, it's so, a lot.
One thing I'm just going to, I randomly, because I started, I wanted to make sure I mention this because it's very important. So he goes on this little, like, not tangent, but like goes on this little, like, imaginary run about a Radiohead biopic that was just like, oh.
I hated that part of the book.
You hated it?
It made me cringe so hard. I mean, I get that it was supposed to.
Yeah, it was supposed to.
It was supposed to be a bad biopic, but it still made me cringe to read. God.
It's funny because he just the sentence like, let's imagine Daniel Radcliffe in a radical tour de force that will finally make the public forget Harry Potter as a young Tom York.
First of all, his career has been exemplary post Harry Potter. So clearly this guy is not up on movies. So,
hey, I watched Miracle Workers too.
Yeah, this guy doesn't watch Miracle Workers.
Yeah, I just watched season one. As a young Tom York who starts playing what he derisively refers to as our Scott Walker song in the studio, while Radiohead is rehearsing for its first single. This is so funny. The producers Sean Slade and Paul Q. Coldery, both of whom are portrayed by Mike Myers doing an overly wrought Scottish accent, even though both men are American in real life, mistakenly believe that Creep actually is a Scott Walker song, which disappoints them because it's the song they like the most. Cut to the next scene in a recording studio. Radiohead tries in vain to nail a good take of Inside My Head Let me skip a little bit forward because this is a great part. As Radiohead lays it down, the dashing guitar player Johnny Greenwood, played by Rami Malek, which, like, why didn't, did we think of that for our biopic episode?
No. So at first, well, they say, what does he say? Rami Malek with, like,
assistance of a floppy black wig and cheek implants.
Yeah. So I hated that. Just reading those words made me barf a little. But the more that I thought about it, I think it's without the cheek. He doesn't need the cheek because he has, like, no, the weird doesn't. Sort of, like, hollow face and haunted eyes of Johnny Greenwood. And I was like, honestly, wouldn't be bad.
It's a great casting. I wish we thought of it. Yeah. And then, you know, he talks about the ka-chunk sound. And I mean, he says, again, he says this in the parenthetical that this is the actual dialogue from real life session.
Oh, yeah.
It's true. It's like, he said, you know, what do you think? I think it's the best thing we've done in ages. Apparently, Johnny replied.
Right. So, yeah, because he did the ka-chunk.
And apparently, again, according to this, I don't know if it's true that they didn't know they were being recorded.
What? In the book it says that?
Yeah, it says here.
I don't remember that part.
The Mike Myers twins suggest taking a stab at the Scott Walker number just to loosen up. What they don't tell the band is that the performance is being recorded.
I wonder if I probably just blocked it out of my mind because of the Mike Myers twins.
It's so funny. That's like, I love that he like nailed like the bad biopic. Like, so well.
Yeah. Yeah, he probably wrote this too before Bohemian Rhapsody. Although maybe not, actually.
Maybe not. Maybe that's who got the idea for Rami as Ed. I mean, Johnny, sorry.
Rami. It would be two Ramis stacked on top of Ramis, each other to play Ramis. Ed.
Yeah. Speaking of Ed, he has a lot on Ed that I love. Oh my God.
Did not expect going into this how much of an Ed head he is.
You know, I'm all for it. I'm all for it.
I believe his first mention of Ed in the book is Ed O'Brien, the handsome, yes, dope smoking guitar player. I was like, okay.
Yes. Yes. I love it. I love it. He talks and he says at one point, the most attractive member of Radiohead to hang out with is Ed.
Yeah, but then he devotes a whole chapter to being an Ed head as well. Or what does he call himself? Not an Ed head, but like...
Oh, I don't know. I don't. Oh,
an Ed person, like.
Yeah, he said he makes like some. Yeah, I think he makes some really interesting points about Ed. Is like, he says because Ed, the dedicated student of rock bands, realized that his most important job was to keep Radiohead together.
Oh, I loved that.
I love
part.
That because yeah. Obviously it's like it's during the when they were trying to record Kid A, right? Yeah,
I believe so. Yeah.
So, like, he knew, yeah, it's like he could have, you know, got his ego, like, the whole sort of almost, like, thesis is, like, he could have let his ego get to him and, like, I don't like this. I want to play rock. I want to play the guitar. But he was, like, and it was so tumultuous. He just knew that the band, you know, these five ragtag boys from England had to stay together because they had something special in his mind. He knew, maybe, you know, he knew that he needed to not, like, to keep everyone together. It's interesting.
Well, yeah, because he talks about Ed with the context of like other people in different bands, like mm-hmm. the Police and REM, right? No,
Smashing Pumpkins.
Smashing Pumpkins, right? Yeah. Smashing Pumpkins and REM will weirdly forever be like at conjoined twins in my head because of just like childhood bald memories men. Of my dad listening to them.
Bald men.
Well, yeah, that also, yeah, that's very good point. But so, like, basically, if Ed had been anyone else or had a different temperament, like the band probably would have broken up. And he had a quote from Ed that was so lovely. It was if you feel good about yourself, you will be honest and generous towards other people. And then later says, in Radiohead, no one is replaceable. And like, no one has that fucking attitude. None of those bands have that attitude.
Yeah, Billy Corgan's like, fuck you. Yeah, you're going to play what I want you to play.
Ego trips. Yeah. Like, and then he also notes about, like, I don't know, like it's that story of like some girl coming up to them and being like, I've got coke in my parents' house. And I'm like, first of all, how old is this girl? And then it's like, Ed, like, she went after Ed and like, Ed turned her down. I'm like, it's just interesting, like, the fact that like he's using this to lead to like put evidence towards like all their descriptions at the time as like rather innocent people,
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, they don't trash the hotel rooms. They don't have groupies.
Yeah.
And like with the more like stories that are coming out with like every rock band ever, just like having like fully like just like impregnating 14-year-olds and shit. Like,
yeah.
I like, there's some shit I read about Jimmy Page recently, or like just all of Led Zeppelin.
Oh, really?
And, like, obviously there are stories about Led Zeppelin and all those bands, but like just fully like, just like some wild Epstein shit, honestly. Like,
yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Like, I mean, I was just like, so, but also that used to be like a sort of part of being a rock band, and like, being an asshole and destroying your hotel room. And like, that was celebrated. And the fact that they weren't doing this was sort of looked down upon at the time. In the 90s. And so like, so it's written about in that context in this book, and I'm just reading this being like, good.
Yeah, and it makes and it makes me feel great about being a Radiohead fan.
Like, exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
It's like there's how many of our like legends and greats throughout all entertainment and stuff have fallen, you know, and have done these terrible things in the past. You're like, well, I can't consume that anymore. I can't.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, there's this one little part of me is like, when is the other shoe going to drop with Radiohead? And the fact that it hasn't makes me think, like, okay, it's not ever going to. It's like, we're okay. I can get a Radiohead tattoo and not feel like I'm fucked.
Wow, you just like made me sick a little. I was just like, that thought honestly had never come into my head.
Well, but that something could happen.
No, like, like, when's the other shoe going to drop? But it never will, so that's fine.
Yeah, no, at this rate, Colin has
bodies in his basement.
Yeah,
if anyone, he strangles them with bass string.
Because you know what? He hasn't put out a solo record. That means he's busy.
Exactly. Exactly.
We cracked it. We know why Colin hasn't done a solo record.
Cracked it.
He's the only one.
Yeah, it's true. Because he's too busy murdering hundreds of people.
Well, let's see how.
And listening to jazz albums really loud.
Yeah, so to drown out the screams.
Exactly. Sorry, Colin. We love you.
Let's see if this takes any sort of life on Reddit after we post this episode.
Oh, God.
But no, we love you. We love you all. We love you, Colin.
What's like the main... Because the main sort of thing I got from this book, other than... like the sort of trajectory of the band and like the focus on Kid A, but also on what came after, and a shit ton of insight onto In Rainbows that I did not have.
Oh yeah.
But was the thing that really stayed with me was a lot in the end, and talking about getting older as both an artist for them, but also as a music fan, and just like for himself in his own life, the author, Stephen Hayden.
Yes.
And it made me really like sad,
like
not like tragic sad, but like just basically like it's just like talking about like death essentially. And like, and it made me think of this Joanna Newsom song called Time as a Symptom, which is because the lyrics are, love is not a symptom of time. Time is just a symptom of love. And I don't specifically like there's not such a parallel to it other than the fact that like time cannot be controlled, and you get older and you value different things, and you maybe can't make the same art that you did when you were 20 years old. He makes a specific point about that. Like 50-year-olds aren't going to make the same art that they did when they were 20-year-olds because they have too much to care about. They have other things, and that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
But when he was talking about the guy from Silver Jews, which, wow, I hadn't thought of in fucking years.
Yeah.
His interview with him before he tragically passed away. But what did he say about, like, what was that, what was his like, insight into making music as an older person? I can't find what I wrote. I guess this was the part that surprised me the most about the book, is just connecting it to like the passage of time and trying to preserve art and albums never being what they were when you first listened to them, because they can't. And you know, like that was really like the deepest thing I got from this book, honestly.
And then the other side of it too is when you look at Kid A, like how, because it's not, maybe it's because of the lyric style, that it's not specifically, you can't tie it to one thing, you can tie it to a lot of things.
Right.
It can be about, like Chuck Klosterman said, about 9/11. It can be about...
Okay, Y2K. So I never read that article, and I kind of don't want to now, because reading that snippet made me really annoyed.
I mean, I've
decided not to read it.
It's interesting. I'll just say that.
Yeah. But he says that it's like a famous Chuck Klosterman article about 9/11 and Kid A. And I was like, and he's like, anyone would have read it. And I was like, well, I never did.
I found it and I read it. And it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, this connects to this and this connects to this. It's just like, because of that whole thing, because it's so amorphous and not, like he says in the book, not meaningless, but like it could be any sort of meaning. You can tie it to it, you know. And he says, like, each song kind of goes through the whole day.
The sequence of the day. That's when I thought it was like, oh, okay. All right.
It's interesting. It's, you know, Chuck Klosterman being Chuck Klosterman.
Yeah. It's like what I would have written in high school, though. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, absolutely.
Like, I feel like as a full adult, I would not write that article. And he was a full adult when he wrote that article. Sorry, Chuck. But
it almost looked like he was right next to you when you looked to your right.
Sorry.
He's like, okay, I'll leave.
Yeah, get the fuck out.
You're just waiting to like be interviewed. I check it out if you want. I had to go to like Google Books and like there's like excerpts of the book, because it's part of a whole book. But that's the whole thing, is that like, it was around that time, and it's about such dark and sort of intense feelings that you can tie it to anything that, you know, you're not going to tie it to fucking, I don't know, something insignificant. I don't know. You're not going to tie it to the, to some insignificant.
Somebody bought shoes.
Yeah. You know, unless it was a real tragedy, unless you got run over by a bus when you went to buy shoes. But, you know, that's what it lends itself to, those interpretations and to those connections, because of not just the emotions behind it, but the mystique of the lyrics and of the music, you know?
Yeah.
And sort of how it moves. The album flows, because as we learned through the articles and through the book, the band almost broke up because of the track listing, trying to figure out the track list.
Which is fucking hilarious.
Pyramid song was almost in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I found the quote from David Berman, is his name, the guy from Silver Jews.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, because he's talking, when the author, Stephen Hayden, had interviewed him, mm-hmm. he came up and Berman said, I guess when I was younger, I always wondered, why do they always suck after 30? After 40? Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have the answer, but I know the solution. And he says, to be great as a middle-aged artist, you have to put in a lot more time, even if it comes at the expense of other parts of your life.
Yeah.
And then he goes on to say that he doesn't really have any other parts of his life, and he's like living in a spare room at Drag City. And then and then obviously later ended up like taking his own life. And I was just like, fuck, man. Like,
yeah.
But it's true. You know, you do have to like, you have to put in more effort and more time, and I don't know, like, hopefully everyone in Radiohead has their own way to balance and cope. I mean, they all seem fairly zen now, like, I'm sure they're all doing transcendental meditation.
We know Ed is, come on. Yeah. I'm pretty sure he said he's done it somewhere in some interview.
Probably. It wasn't in the book, but I'm sure I've seen it somewhere.
Yeah. But it's also interesting to think, I don't know if this was in the book or any other article, like, what would have happened if Kid A wasn't a commercial success? Like, would they have gone in the same direction? Would they have been able to?
Well, probably, because they already had Radio or Amnesiac, like, in the bucket, you know? That's not a term.
In
the bucket.
Just in the bucket, just waiting to get sloshed around.
Slopped.
Slopped.
Into the trough.
Yeah.
Of the record store.
No, but maybe like after Amnesiac, like Hails of the Thief and whatnot, what, you know, or like would they have been still together as a band?
It's impossible to know.
No, of course.
Like, this is like, what if?
Yeah.
This is like the man in the high castle for
exactly.
Fans.
Exactly.
Wow. Sorry. Ooh. I didn't really think about what I was saying when I said it. I take that back.
I'm going to write that book. What if Kid A was a failure? It'd be my novel, my first novel.
It's like it turns into a pure dystopia.
Or the opposite, utopia. Because now we are in a dystopia.
Well, it's not quite fully there yet. Just on a way. Just like run slowly away. Chugging down the mineshaft.
Chugging down. That's a great metaphor.
But the Chuck Klosterman thing makes me think of, because he does touch on Room 237. The documentary about shining theories. And the thing that I noted, because I deeply agree with it, like I was so stoked on seeing Room 237, and then I was kind of like, But he says,
same.
Everyone in Room 237 comes off as an incredibly smart and impressively articulate lunatic. And I'm like, that's...
It's so true.
And then he later goes on to say, it ultimately doesn't matter what the artist intended.
Yeah,
which is true, and like that's why all this stuff about like, oh, like it's the day of waking up, 9/11, this, that, like, sure, that's like maybe that's how you feel, but like,
yeah,
I don't know, you don't need to be published. Sorry, I'm like, maybe I should read the article because I just it left me. I was just you like, should. Really,
goddamn. You should just so you can know that it's just so you can know if it's. If it really makes you uncomfortable or not.
Yeah, okay. maybe someday I'll read it.
Okay, here's that reminds me of, speaking of going back a little bit just to the BuzzFeed article, this is going, and that same sort of thing, like, doesn't matter what the artist wants. When people talk about Kid A or Radiohead in general, they often attempt to get inside Tom York's head.
Oh, yes.
Who cares what he was thinking? Who cares what he was arriving for or trying to accomplish or wanted to say? All that matters is what's on the page, and all that matters is how it makes you feel. Oof, that's good.
It's true. It's totally fucking true.
Yeah.
Which is why things like that are useless. Deep analyzation is useless.
Yep. Just
to say. It's just for turn NYU off your brain Gallatin. And it's just for NYU Gallatin classes.
I'm surprised I never wrote an article about Radiohead in college. That's so on brand for me, but I didn't do it.
I'm frankly surprised I didn't either. Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Well,
probably wrote one.
I wrote an essay about Fight Club, but
yeah, you know, he talks about it in the book Fight Club a lot, obviously, with like OK Computer and Brad Pitt and listening to them and Tom Amos doing the score.
Yeah.
But I forgot that, or maybe didn't know that Fight Club gave us Snowflake.
Yeah.
The term Snowflake.
But not like, in the. Damn it. But not in the same. Wait. What are they? How do they use it in the movie? Oh, you're not a. No. In the movie, it's a slightly different, because now we use it as someone who's like weak and like whatever and easily. In there, it's like you're not unique.
Special. That's true. No, as soon as you said that, I completely remember. It's that you're not unique. Yeah.
Well. Yeah. Yeah.
But he was definitely saying that like it got co-opted. I don't know. Maybe that's just, maybe that was just a stretch on his part, because it is a completely different meaning.
Yeah. Well, no, it got all of Fight Club got co-opted, like the whole men fighting.
Project
like,
Mayhem, yeah.
But it's like, that's what was supposed to be a satire. It's a
satire, yeah.
And of consumerism, too. There's
soap out of people's fat, you know.
Yeah, everyone does that now.
Yeah.
There's one thing I also wanted to bring up in the book, we wanted to address, is that he talks a lot about like, generational things of like, Gen Xers had OK Computer and Kid A, and Millennials had In Rainbows as their record. I'm like, you're two Millennials here. We both were very much into stuff before In Rainbows. So,
but we're also like slightly older Millennials. So
true.
You know, that's the thing. But I think from his perspective as a Xennial, as he called himself, like technically true. Gen X. Anyone who's a millennial is obviously younger, and I mean, because he kind of, in some ways, sounds like not like a derogatory sense, but the old people writing about OK Computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or sorry, the old people writing about Kid A at the time, because they were all old. White men, needless to say, talking about an album that was not really made for them.
Exactly.
Not that he isn't right, you know what I mean? But like, it's true. He's kind of out of that like peak sort of context for these things. So to anyone, they're just people that are younger than him. So he couldn't tell the difference between us and someone who's like 26 who did just get into Radiohead through In Rainbows. Like, to us, to him, we're all the same generation.
Yeah. You know? And it's, and he, because he also says, like, oh, when you, that record, when you're eight, that period from 18 to 22. And I think we've talked about it before. It's usually when that record, when you were 14, right? That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, that's what Kid A was and OK Computer for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Or I mean, Amnesiac. It's also like, yeah. Well, it's also, it's just, I think he talks about that. It's like, people say that it's the article when, or the article, the album when you're 15, but he reframes it for himself to be more the album when you're 18.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
But then it's interesting that he then goes on to tangents about the Strokes and also Linkin Park.
Oh, of course.
But basically, he became way more of a Strokes fan at that time.
Of course.
And like, that was what he was sort of vibing. I mean, I actually wasn't. I was in the White Stripes camp, obviously.
I liked them both.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they were like remember it was all about the bands, and like, it was like the meme of the time.
The Hives, yeah.
Yeah, the Vines.
Yeah. No, that is, and it's interesting how he frames like the Strokes, like around that time. It's like, it was like, you know, all this, you know, 9/11 happened and this and that, and it's like, oh my God, let's just escape. Let's go back.
Right.
You know? And it's like a perfect time. They got lucky.
Yeah.
All in all, I think it's, I mean, we could talk about this book, I think, for another hour, but I think it's important that people just read it and we don't spoil the whole thing. No spoilers now. I think it ends really well. I don't want to read, like, let people get to the end and read that. I think the last page, I think, is really, he's got some really nice little, how he ties it up and everything. I think it's really beautiful. I will say one thing. So when I first heard about this book, I didn't know his writing. I didn't know his style, anything. I just saw this cover. I saw the cover and the title. I'm like, oh, I'm going to read this, but it's probably going to be really dense and academic. That's what I thought. So going in, when I started reading, I'm like, oh, this is great. You know, I thought it was going to be super, like, you know, like heady and stuff.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be way more tied to, like, geopolitics and, like, technology.
Yes, exactly.
And then actually when I first started it, I was like, oh, this is going to be like a Chuck Klosterman article. But thankfully, like, mirror pages in, I was like, oh, this is, I'm enjoying this. Like, this is a really interesting, it definitely has perspective. You know what I mean? It's not just like this is Kid A, this is this band. Yeah. It wasn't just like a generic story, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's through his perspective, through his lens. Yeah. Yeah, it's that's, I was very happy because I was like slightly dreading reading it at first. Being like, if it's gonna be like dense and like super like whatever, it's like, but again, highly, highly, highly recommend it. Obviously, if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't read the book already, like, what are you doing? if you're listening to this and you have other favorite parts of the book, let us know. Like, tweet at us or whatever.
What's your favorite part?
Yeah, or like something you like maybe. A question you had about the book or Kid A, you know, tweeted us
something you didn't agree with, or if you didn't agree with us, in our analysis.
In that case, keep that to yourself. that's. I mean, there's so much to say about Kid A. Another thing, I feel like we should have like started with this: the fact that we didn't get a box set, a reissue. It still could happen. I do believe it seems like they were working on something and that the pandemic kind of threw everything.
Probably.
Obviously, which happens to a lot of things, obviously. So hopefully it's still in the works. Maybe by next year we'll get a Kid Amnesiac. Oh, shit. That is something I did want to go over real quick. His Kid Amnesiac track list.
Oh, yeah. Also, the fact that he calls Amnesiac the Tokyo Drift of albums.
Oh yeah, I love that.
I truly, truly LOL'd when I read that.
Yeah, he's very funny. Follow him on Twitter. He's very funny. Let's real quick just go through it. And how about you say like good, like thumbs up or thumbs down?
All right, let me ask you, did you listen to this? Did you make a playlist and listen to it like that?
I didn't.
I did while I was reading it.
And
it has it, well, it has no flow, but obviously it would have been produced. It would have been produced to have flow.
Yeah, flow. Are you saying Tom York rapping more? No.
Good one.
Thanks.
Great. But yeah, no, there's things I appreciated about it and things I didn't. But okay, so we're doing thumbs up.
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't think about this. All right, I have to think about listening to it. Okay, so he starts with Everything in Its Right Place. Obviously, you gotta.
Yeah, great.
You can't not. Great. You can't not.
Yeah.
Then National Anthem.
I was like, that's an interesting choice.
Just get rid of Kid
straight
A.
In.
I mean, I love Kid A, so it's tough for me to like. But it's all right. And then Pyramid Song.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
Yeah. No. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that. Then How to Disappear Completely. I think it's tough to put those next to each other because they're both sort of like very down tempo. Putting them right next to each other is, I would have put, if I was going to do this, put Pyramid Song before and National Anthem, then National Anthem into How to Disappear Completely.
Would like it as on the album.
Yeah, exactly. So just let's keep Kid A as it is. and then from How to Disappear Completely, Dollars and Cents.
I kind of liked that.
That's interesting.
As when I was listening to it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Is it like it kind of flows into it?
Yeah, just because of the flow, pretty much. Because like, what am I going to do? All the songs are good. It's not like I don't like the songs. I'm like, oh, good, another song I like. But it was more like, does it make sense
next
to each other? Yeah.
Yeah. And then after that, Optimistic, which I think is interesting. I think that kind of works.
Yeah.
And then, of course, in Limbo, you can't separate Optimistic and Limbo.
The best part is that, like, when he did that, I, like, listened to it, and I hadn't, listened to them one and two the next in a bit, and I was just like, oh, it's so fucking good!
That fucking funk, like, intermission, whatever you want, refrain is so fucking good.
He does say something really, or someone in, I don't know if it's him, it might have been in one of the many articles, but, like, just talking about that, like, funk breakdown between the two songs.
I think he said, it's here, exemplary. He says, what links them is a funky jam that sounds like the Isley Brothers sitting in with the Mos Eisley Cantina Band from Star Wars.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good.
And then we go, you know, for doing a vinyl. That's the end of side A. And then side B. Sorry.
I thought it was a weird end for an album. In Limbo, being a weird loan for a side, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Never mind. It's okay for a side. The album ender I was not so keen on.
Okay.
As an album ender. But sorry. Continue.
So side B starts with Cut To, so he brings in a fucking B-side.
I'm in favor.
I love Cut To.
Fucking favor. Cut Tooth forever.
It's a good side
opener
B for
your side, yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure thinking about like In Limbo into Cut Tooth, they could maybe work, but as a side B for sure.
Yeah.
And then Cut Tooth, I have to Cut Tooth Knives Out, which in some ways I think they're almost too, I don't want to say too similar, but kind of. I want something to break it up a little bit between those two. In my mind.
No, I can see that.
Yeah.
I'm slightly agreeing.
Yeah.
But I don't know what I would put, you know.
Yeah, that's true. We should have done our own. Maybe we can do our own.
No, like, I don't wanna.
You have to, Christina. You have to. Okay, so after that, it's Morning Bell, obviously the Kid A version. It's interesting after Knives Out. I think that could work. And then, which I think this is really interesting, I might be wrong. After Morning Bell.
Very bizarre.
I feel like I would put I Might Be Wrong earlier if you're going to put it in. And then You and Whose Army.
Weird after I Might Be Wrong.
Is that where is it on Amnesiac? I forget.
It's track 4.
Oh, that is weird. And then after You and Whose Army, this is a crazy sequence. Right after You and Whose Army, Idiotech. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, also he does note that like people will be mad about separating it from Morning Bell. And I'm like, I am.
You're right, sir.
You're right. You're correct. That one right.
But I do think that Idiotech into like Spinning Plates is very interesting.
Oh, I love it.
That's a really good pairing.
I mean, obviously, I love like Spinning Plates, but as much as I love like Spinning Plates,
you
it's a weird album.
You cannot end. You cannot. Too unsettling.
I would maybe go like walk off a pier if that was the end of the album. Because you're just left, kind of like.
Yeah, like, huh?
Like, it's not even like it's depressing, but it's just so unfinished. It's unfinished and unsettling. It's like, what do I do now? You know, I don't know. I didn't like it. And again, as much as I love that song,
I would say you'd have to end with Motion Picture Soundtrack is iconic in my mind. You can't. It's just such a great album ender. I mean, Life in a Glass House is too, but between the two, I would pick Motion Picture for sure.
Yeah, but Life in a Glass House does come after like Spinning Plates, so it already has that good. It's so perfect together. This is why this is a useless construct.
It's fun to think about.
Fun for you, maybe, and for Steve.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's fine. But
it was interesting.
But yeah, oh, because he does talk about how, like, I don't think he recognized, because he doesn't feel as strongly about Amnesiac as we do.
Yeah.
That's one thing I noticed. But and he breaks apart the whole, like, back half flow that is the peak of Amnesiac.
Yeah.
And maybe their career for me.
Those
songs into each other, you know?
I think it is that thing I think we were talking about earlier, where like when it came out for us.
Yeah.
Like for me, it was the first Radiohead album I was anticipating. I was a fan before. Right. Like I wasn't a fan when Kid A came out. I became a fan and then I was excited for Amnesia.
Exactly.
So and so I was, you know, 15 years old.
Well, and also, doesn't he say that, like, by the time Amnesia came out, like, that was really when he was vibing on the Strokes? You know?
Yep. Yeah.
But so, you know, maybe he just doesn't get it. And here, to come back to another quote that I just noticed, that doesn't really, it's not really what we're saying, but what he says, when critics claim that a band takes themselves too seriously, what they're really saying is we're too old to take seriously the thing that the generation behind us loves. Not that he's saying that Amnesiac takes itself too seriously, but it's that same sort of thing where you're like, you missed that moment, you know, or the moment wasn't for you, or, but he doesn't pass judgment on it, but he just doesn't quite have it, you know?
Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing.
Well, Stephen, you got to come on our podcast and we'll debate you on this for just
debate
literally
me.
The whole time. Yeah,
sorry,
debate
I was just
me.
Thinking
come
of
on.
Ben Shapiro.
Come on, why are you scared? Why are you scared, Stephen, to come on our podcast and debate us?
God, disgusting.
No, Stephen, we would love to chat with you. You're a fantastic writer, and we really
love the book. For
come
sure.
on our podcast, please. So I think. I mean, do you have any final thoughts on the book or Kid A before we do our last little bit, our last segment?
I mean,
what is there? There's so much more to say, but yeah.
Well, I guess they do. I mean, yeah, there's so much more to say, but I guess what I will say is that I was surprised at how much I learned.
Yes.
Because I thought I had read every fucking thing about this album in this time.
Yeah.
And also, and specifically what I was saying about, like, in Rainbows, like, I learned so much about that shit and how they almost broke up, which I kind of knew, but, like,
it's just
really great to, like, still be surprised
by
like, learning new facts about a band that you've loved for a long time, and you think, you're like, yeah, okay, so they met at school, and then they did this, and then they did that. We all know the same fucking story, but
Edit theater, we know. We all know.
and then Johnny the Chunk Chunk,
and Colin is a serial killer. We know. Yeah. We all know. It's obvious.
But there are so many, because you know, after I posted it, I transferred them to little notes, and there's just so many things in here that I was like, "What?
Yeah,
what?" So, I would be hard pressed to find a Radiohead fan that could read this and not be surprised.
Exactly.
Or learn, or be moved. Honestly.
Moved,
It was very moving at the end, especially.
Yeah. I agree. Speaking of moving, I don't have a segue. Moving into the segue, we are now going to do our favorite segment, Song Sommelier, where we take Radiohead songs and pair them with very specific circumstances, just like maybe a sommelier pairs wine with food. all right, I'm ready this time. Not like the past few episodes where I'm like, oh shit. I was like, oh shit, oh shit. I even wrote it down.
Oh shit. Did you print it out?
Yep. Excellent. You can't see it because of my virtual background. But so, Christina, please, what do you got for me?
All right. So you're driving around countryside, let's just say.
Oh.
And let's say you've partied the night before.
Okay.
And you're driving around slightly hungover. Mm-hmm. Just sort of getting the vibes of the countryside in the daylight. And all of a sudden, you see, not all of a sudden, just like slowly you realize you're seeing slightly unsettling things. Like, well, first of all, a lot of Trump flags and signs.
No.
And then like a deer, like a taxidermy deer with its like half of its face is gone. Ooh. And then you see like the remnants of a trash fire. And you start to think to yourself, did the revolution happen last night? Like, did the apocalypse happen last night? And we missed it?
Oh my
because
God.
Because we were having a party? And you just continue driving along with that sort of uncertainty and fear. What's the Radiohead song for that?
I mean, maybe it's just because we just talked about it, but it feels like it's like spinning plates. Just like unsettling and just like everything's backwards, right? So it's like,
oh yeah,
everything's different, but then you hear the voice forward and you're like, oh, it's not. But is it?
Right.
Yeah, that's got to be it, you know? And, you know, just the whole vibe of the song feels like that. For sure.
No, that's good. I like that. You know, funny, like when he was talking about that song in the book and how it was I Will and how it was reversed, I went back and I listened to the, just like on YouTube, the reversed, like spinning plates, and I forgot how good it is.
Oh, yeah.
It's so beautiful.
And the typewriter, you can actually hear the typewriter.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is there any other song that samples a typewriter like that or uses a typewriter? I don't know. At least in any sort of context. Maybe.
What about that song Kvalda from the Dancer in the Dark soundtrack with all like the factory noises?
Oh,
I think it's
okay,
just,
yeah.
I think it's just factory noises, no, actually.
Machinery.
Yeah, yeah.
Similar. Very similar. Okay.
Crash,
okay.
Bang, pow.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Yeah. Pretty good. Too bad Lars von Trier is a monster.
Yeah. Did you see the house that Jack built?
I read all about it.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, no, I'm good. I don't need to watch it. I'm
done. Like, thanks, Lars.
I'm done with Lars.
Moving on, Lars.
Yeah. So what's your situation? You're trapped in a room with Lars von Trier.
Yep, trapped in a room. And Colin is playing a jazz record very loudly. All right, so this is going to stick. So it's kind of similar, but not exactly. So you're walking through the woods. It's daytime. Maybe you're with someone else, just you and someone else at most, just you and someone else. You're not alone, but you're with someone else. You're walking through it, and there's no one else around. But it's very similar so far. Yeah, but it's not like you're in the woods. It's like a place where it's like a park where people hike and stuff.
Okay.
But there's no one around.
Yeah.
So it's both peaceful, but then there's this little bit of fear, like when you see no one around and you're in the woods, even though it's daytime, it's a little unsettling, but also peaceful and nice at the same time because it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. What is that like feeling that tension and walking around in the wilderness? With just one other person, trying to enjoy yourself, but also a little bit unsettled or frightened.
My first inclination immediately was motion picture soundtrack.
Ooh.
But I don't know if that really conveys the true level of unsettlingness that would have.
Yeah.
Let's see. Maybe a little... maybe a little pyramid song.
Oh,
pyramid it's very beautiful, song. Beautiful, yeah. But unsettling.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely, and like then just and you're sort of thinking, yeah, I like it. I'm not gonna explain it more. It's really good vibe. Good vibe because it's also down tempo. So like,
yeah,
I like it. That's really good.
Well, great job, Radiohead.
Great job, Radiohead, for making great tunes. That's our slogan, for our tagline for our podcast. Great job, Radiohead, for making great tunes. Well, that's our episode. Please, obviously, share, like, subscribe, all that stuff. Leave a review. But also, more importantly, fucking vote if you live in the United States of America.
No, or anywhere. Or in your own country, right. Too.
Correct. If you can, if your country allows it, please vote.
Just generally. Also vote, especially if you live in America, please.
Yeah, especially if you live in Florida, Pennsylvania.
Wisconsin.
But I also do want to say, like, we have, like, lately I was looking at Spotify. We have, like, listeners lately in Malaysia. Shout out to our listeners in Malaysia, Israel, Australia, New Zealand, Netherlands, Chile, South Africa. We're, you know, to everyone all over the world. Yeah.
Global podcast.
Yeah, it's really cool to see that it shows the reach of Radiohead, you know?
It's true.
And people want to hear us blabber on about Radiohead. It's great.
I mean, where would we be if they didn't?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for listening.
We'd be Chuck Klosterman. Sorry. No more digs. I'm sorry.
Did he leave yet, or is he still sitting there pouting?
Oh, God. Now I'm just, like, imagining it like a ghost in a horror movie. Ugh. He's just, like, in the corner, like, in the shadows. I have to get an exorcist.
But he has headphones on. He's listening to a vinyl.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess this is our spooky episode.
Oh, yes. Happy Halloween. If you be safe. Wear a mask.
As part of your costume.
Under your mask. Like,
under
don't just
and
wear...
over.
Yeah.
Probably over, because then if it's over, people will be able to know that you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, that's important that people know.
If it's just under, maybe people can't see it, and they might think you're one of those people who don't wear masks.
Which, don't be those people. Wear a fucking mask. Wear it over your nose. Yes. It's important.
Yes. Michael Myers says, wear a mask over your Michael Myers mask.
Yep. And yeah, be safe, and hopefully we'll get another... If we'll get an end-of-year podcast, hopefully we'll be happy, and we'll get to talk about end-of-year stuff.
We would have had so much more had not so many things been canceled, including Tom York's show.
Tom York and Ed.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, on that terrible note.
See you soon.
See you soon. Bye.
Bye.